This is Katie Hopkins like you've never seen her before. There's tears, there's anger, there's rants, and there's laughter. In between exposing obesity, Prince Harry, the monarchy, the banking system, there is some deep and meaningful content that I think is going to surprise you greatly. Katie gets horny about Elon Musk, slams the current state of the UK, and flirts with me outrageously. And in a brand new format, a full review of the major events of the year. Let's do this.
Katie, Elon Musk, the rebel. Yeah, I know this turned you on quite a bit.
Totally.
So, he's taken over Twitter, turned it to X, brought in a new revenue model because he says he needs to save the company. And the advertisers are all pulling away because they don't want to be associated with far-right content. And then in a room full of very well-established business people, he said, "Don't blackmail me. Go fuck yourself. Did you hear what I said? Go fuck yourself."
Oh, golly.
Let's talk about that.
Just so exciting, and so exciting at so many levels. A, because the guy interviewing him was trying to, you could see, trying to protect Elon and even trying to say, "Oh, but you see, your business model does require these people, doesn't it, Elon?" And Elon was like, "Fuck them." And the guy, he was trying to help him as a friend, and Elon was having none of it. So he was like, "I'm done with these people."
I mean, he even went, "Fuck you." He said, "Are you here, Bob?" As in Disney. Head of Disney. So he even called out.
Called him out by name. A guy, can you imagine the head of Disney, how his life is?
Yeah.
Like only minions. "Yes, Bob. No, Bob. Oh, blow me, Bob. Ah, da, da." And he just goes, "Bob, I hope you're listening. Fuck you." Like, Bob would never have known that in his life. Not for 20 years, 40 years will Bob have known that. And Elon called it on a stage.
But that's so risky, isn't it?
It was so... But maybe that's him...
Well, is that why everyone loves him?
Yes, living his life on the high wire between ultimate disaster and ultimate failure and ultimate triumph. You know, spaceships, rockets that launch themselves and come back to Earth again and just disintegrate into the stars according to plan by Elon, of course, all planned because he knows what he's doing. I loved it. He's got the woman in the room that he employed to be CEO of the organization to sell advertising. She sat in the seats. She's briefed Elon on what she wants him to say. And he sits on the stage and goes, "Go fuck yourself."
Wow.
Like, just, I was like, it's the hottest thing I ever saw. It's so masculine. Like, it's beyond masculine. You know, there's Andrew Tate, masculinity. You have a certain masculinity, but we don't want to talk about it. So we don't want to, you know, blow smoke up your ass. Elon Musk that day, so masculine. Like, I would blow down at the altar of Elon Musk any day. It's not a require. He's not ever asked for that. And I don't know that I would be particularly his cup of tea.
Should we put this out as a campaign?
Yeah, see, look, listen, we know a slight transsexual-looking horse-faced old bag from the UK. She is offering to blow you, Elon. What do you say? Just try it. Yeah, if you know, if you have people
that
know...
We'll tweet that.
Tweet it. Let Elon know that I am totally willing to blow him any day of the week. No charge.
Right.
I think that's a bargain. Mostly just because of his masculine thing. It was just... But away from the sexual side of things, also just really restorative when, if you know the power of the advertisers, you know, so at LBC, where I used to have a show, the way people got rid of me from that radio show was to go to the advertisers and get the advertisers to pull. So knowing someone just says, "You aren't going to bribe me," after all the years of all of us being cancelled at the behest of advertisers, just so not. It just felt like you had a... Felt like you had a spokesperson all of a sudden, or a fighter in your corner. Yeah,
it's too much control from these big advertisers, isn't it?
The control mechanism of advertising, and the control mechanism of the powerful, and the control mechanism of the Board of Deputies, or the Muslim Council, or the Catholic Churches. Doesn't matter what religion. All of those control mechanisms are all the things that are the shackles that we try and shake off. So it just felt like he... It was like the releasing of chains. It was exceptional.
I'm very proud to say this episode is sponsored by AG1. As you know, we're more than 1,000 episodes into Disruptors, and I very rarely have sponsors. I'm really choosy on sponsors, and I only pick people that I love myself and I use myself. I have turned down loads of sponsors, but personally, I've been using AG1 for nearly 14 years myself before we ever did a sponsorship deal with them. For me, AG1 really helps with my mental focus, clarity, and overall well-being. As someone who's really freaking busy and can't always sit down and eat a million vegetables in a day, knocking back a big pint full of AG1 in the morning is perfect for me. Of course, health is wealth, and I'm in my mid-40s, I'm realizing that more and more. So if you'd like to try AG1 yourself with a special exclusive offer that I have for you right now, go to drinkag1.com/disruptors. That's drinkag1.com/disruptors and get a free year's supply of vitamin D3, K2 and 5 travel packs with your first purchase on me. So one more time, that's drinkag1.com/disruptors. AG1, thanks for sponsoring the show. You are legends.
So on this show, Disruptors, I like to talk about money because I think it's such an under-discussed subject.
Yes.
A lot of people don't have the courage to talk about it. It's terrible education around money, yet we all need
True.
It.
True.
So I found something you said, and it's, I don't know if you said it around money, but I think it could spark the conversation. So you said that poor people are poor because they are lazy. Do you stand by this?
Yeah, a lot of the time, poor people are poor because they're lazy. Yeah.
So is there a difference, though, between poor and broke? Because I'm sure many people in the developing world who are born poor. Bill Gates said, if you're born poor, it's not your fault. But if you die poor, it is your fault.
Ah, and I think poor in context, because there's a lot of people who have nothing, but I would never describe that as poor. I actually think the opposite is true. I think people who are born with very little go through life needing very little because of the way their community works and die with the privilege of being content are the richest that there is, that there are. So please, I should be clear, and this is why words are difficult because there's so much layering to them. But very often people who are poor in a context where you can be wealthy or you can earn an income.
So you're in the developed world, you've got the internet, you've got a library.
Yeah.
You can go and meet people who are successful in that context.
In that context, when that was said probably about 10 years ago, poor people are poor because they're lazy. I think it's true. Because I feel like the endeavour, if you have endeavour, you can make a way. And that may be only enough to sustain yourself, one person, but you can endeavour to sustain yourself. So I would absolutely stand by that. But yeah, I suppose when I'm thinking about people who were born with very little but live very content lives, I think of Mexico and spending time in Mexico. And I just love the way South Americans or Mexicans on a Sunday have their whole family there, you know, young, very old, someone who just gave birth 2 seconds ago. And they always just seem to be having so much fun. It's almost like the pursuit of happiness is their number one priority. And I think they've got the ordering on that right. But yeah, I think too many people use excuses as a reason for expecting to be looked after. And I think you have to expect to look after yourself. And I will drive that hard. I've driven that into my kids. You know, they buy their own car, they have to buy their own, they have to go out to work, they have to buy their own phones, they have to pay their own phone bill. I believe you have to endeavour.
But what about this thing with a woman and her role? Something else I found that you said.
Sure.
And I haven't finished the money one because I want to talk about getting rich on the other side of it.
Yes, and losing things. You know, that's the other thing. Losing stuff we can talk about. But yeah.
So you said full-time mummy is not a job title.
Yeah. Yes, 100%.
But isn't that the role of... Isn't that the traditional role of a woman?
Traditional role of a woman and potentially your choice. Like, you want to be a full-time mum and it's worked out for you to do that and you love it? Amazing. Mm. I totally couldn't have and didn't want to be that.
What, because being a mum wasn't fulfilling enough or because you wanted to be financially independent yourself?
I just needed something else. But I see the women that love it and it's enough for them. And I'm like, ooh, that would be a weird thing, but I get it. Mm.
But what about the argument, though, that if they don't make themselves financially independent, what if they get left by the man and they're left? And
yeah, I just would say full-time money, mummy is a choice, but it isn't your job. It's not your profession. If it's a way you've chosen to live, and there's so much merit to that, I'm sure, but it's not a profession. Mm. So when people say, I'm a full-time mummy, that's my job. Yeah, sure, but it isn't a profession. And you aren't delivering for your children long-term way of providing for them. And you know what? I am certain a lot of that comes from a sense of being left. And I always worked when I was young, but when I had my two children, and they were, well, one was just under a year and one was 1 day old, and I was left. And this isn't for sympathy and this isn't victim. And
you
this
were left
isn't...
by your husband, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. And
how did that feel?
Yeah, well, I made the decision to marry him, didn't I? So therefore I own all of that, right? If you marry an asshole, then, you know, more fool you. Like your sense of person, for given now I would pride myself on knowing people. Oh, where was I when I was marrying my husband? Anyway, I was left in the maternity ward the day after I gave birth to my second daughter. And I say, I guess my strength of feeling about full-time mummy isn't your job is, I guess, coming out of that sense of you've got it. You know, I went back when I recovered, like myself, which was a few days later because you had to get recovering pretty quick, which was just like, right, we're now an island. There's me and there's two girls and I will be everything. I will be the cleaner, the roof fixer, the mender, the job, the and I did, and I was, and for the longest time.
Do you think that's a masculine, made you more masculine?
Oh, no, I was always massively masculine, hence the trans weirdness, right? So, and it freaks Americans out, actually, how masculine I am. And I mean that in an honest way, like people
So you
laugh.
Weren't hardened by life, it's just how you are?
No, I went to the military straight out of uni, like I was drawn to all things male, because male things make so much more sense to me. I don't understand much about female things. I'm basically Caster Semenya. I was pretty good at the 800 metres as well, as it happens. but I will say, I guess strong women, I love it. And people say, well, I'm a mum, but I'm strong. But I just think strong women who can also be, not feel that they're dependent on someone, I guess is what I needed to become. Mm. Not dependent on anyone, just dependent on me. And that I've drummed it into my kids. They will always depend on me. As in, if they need me. If you're in the shit, who do you call? Mum. Mm. Now that is drilled in them. So if you ask, if they came through the door now and you said to like Indy or whatever, if you're in the shit, who do you call? I know the answer. Mm. Yeah.
This fascinates me, this discussion, because I feel like where you had the traditional woman who would raise the children and look after the home and the traditional man who would go and work and hunt or whatever. And now it's like you've got some very fiercely strong, independent, almost masculine women, financially independent, building their careers, and you don't need a man. And therefore, you've got these very weak, emasculated men.
Yes, 100%.
And like what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman, it seems so homogenized and confused.
I think it's right, except that my sort of strength in terms of, I've got this, I'll fight this, I'll go to South Africa and stand up for them, I'll stand up for them, that me. You know, but my appreciation for properly strong men is knows no bounds.
Elon.
And Elon would be atypical because, like, he's, you know, from tech, and tech for me is usually kind of, you know, is usually kind of someone that I think of like a eunuch without a penis, because I don't really go for anybody from tech normally. So big, strong men who can do useful things, back to the old days and the old ways. So I met, you know, when I'm doing my speakeasies or stand up, people, you know, I will celebrate them. So I'll be like, any builders in the house? And the lads, oi, any plumbers? You know, and then it's kind of the whole joke is like, like it gets more and more turn on, like a joiner. Come on, carpenter. And it goes on like this. And it's super fun. But also it's a moment of going, strong men who can do stuff. A guy came up after a speakeasy, told me he was a blacksmith. Tell you. My clothes nearly came off. I was like, sorry, tell me that again, but quieter in this ear. So I find it incredibly exciting when men are useful and can do more fundamental, not primitive, because it's epic, but tasks. Mm. And I think that is actually the strength of what I am. It's not that I'm actually more male. I'm just more sort of primitive, like, you go do that. Go blacksmith me something and leave this shit to me. I've got this. I don't need you to look after the cave. I've got this shit. Just so happens that my cave encompasses anybody that I think has been done down or done wrong to. So it's that, it's more like we're both really, we all can all be super strong, but really strong men, I think, should be lifted up and celebrated. And that's what I think is starting to happen.
Do you think there's a bit of a rebellion against really strong men, though, now? Because it's almost like, well, that's toxic.
No, that's, I think that's old. I think that's before. Right. I think that's dated. Toxic masculinity is,
just a movement that we've gone through.
Oh, some fat old ugly lesbian that couldn't ever like guys decided to come up with toxic masculinity. Oh, fuck off and go and flick a bean. You know what I mean? Like these beaver munchers. I love me a lesbian. I do. Like... Bring me a lesbian. I want a proper lesbian, though. Like, my favourite kind of lesbian is not the new lesbian, the hot ones. It's like old school lesbian. Like, my mother was, she's a lesbian. Right? So, lesbian. Like, proper Claire Balding lesbian. Like, proper, you know, flat shoes, sizable breasts. Chomping away, gobbling away like a raccoon on a Vaseline corn on the cob. Blah, 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 blah. A beaver buffet.
You've thought about this a lot, haven't you?
No, but I really do like a lesbian. It's so cute.
They're trying to laugh.
He's trying to be trying to be quiet laughter. I love me a lesbian, but I think those lesbians that came up with toxic masculinity, they can all fuck off. And actually, we need masculine desperately. And one of the glorious things about this new parallel community I've talked to you about is it's made up of useful men and useful women who are good at shit. And I'm just drawn to them. It's like the butchers up the road. There's three butchers there, I tell you. They're not safe from me. They're not. Bring me a butcher. You know, it's definitely it's something much more primitive. Men who in future years we're going to need, I find very exciting.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
I know.
Wow.
I told you there's lots to be positive
about.
Yeah,
there is.
Look, I'm doing a little leg stretch now.
Do you think as a society we've got more narcissistic?
I think it's like the curve is different. I think from a young people's point of view, the narcissism, it's unfortunate. It's sort of been placed upon them, the relentless self mirroring of self or observing of others and trying to replicate. It's a narcissism, but it's not found, it's pushed on them. And we did that, and that's terrible.
Who's we?
The generation that brought in internet or just went, oh, this is exciting, oh, let's have a little Google, that made these all of our kids absolutely monopolized by images of themselves or what they aspire to be. That is narcissism in a new age. But I think actually at my age, my people, older people, I think much less actually. There's a quest for real. There's a quest for a thirst for authentic. There's a real yearning to be with people who are really normal, as in really weird maybe, but who don't have pretenses, who aren't trying to keep up appearances. You know, I think one of the reasons I guess I've been so lucky recently is people can watch my stuff. Most are laughing at me, I think, or with me, but I just put it all out there. And a lot of people excuse me as being drunk. So I do this thing on a Friday night, it's a pub online, and people will say, oh my God, she's worse for wear. Or, oh, Katie's obviously quite a few drinks in, but I'm not, like now, you know. It's just how they can't work out why someone isn't pretending things. So they say you're drunk, and I'm not. It's just I'm not paid for by anyone. I don't have anyone to please. I don't need to pretend to be polite, or I'm not constrained by anything because I don't have an employer. I don't have anything to lose. So this is it. If you don't like it, that's also fine. But I'm not drunk.
My wife thinks at the moment there's quite an obesity epidemic. I think she said that 25% of people in the UK are now obese. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think we're coming back from that as well. I think that was before people were just chumbawambas, like just a lot, a lot of chunky people.
Is it okay to call a fat person fat?
100% it's okay to call a fat person fat. I think it's more respectful of a fat person to call them fat. And my experience with fat people is don't pretend they're not. You're fat. But if you're fat and you own it, epic.
But I don't think most fat people own it, do they?
I don't know about that. Because people know my views about Chumbawambas in that I think if you're a Chumbawamba, totally more power to you. You do that. Eat the fridge. Blast through KFCs twice a week. You do that, but just don't ask me to believe it's not because you ate too much. And don't ask me...
Oh, so it's not the thyroid or...
Yeah, exactly. No. Don't ask me to pay for your new hip. Right? Own that, because you ate yourself to a new hip or new knees. And don't tell me it runs in the family. Because there's one thing for certain, no fucker has ever run in your family, otherwise you wouldn't be in the position you're in. And don't tell me you've got big bones, because you haven't. It's because you eat too much. And as long as we're like that, then you'll be as fat as you want. But no, I think we're coming back from it because I think young people want to look a certain way and see this fat crap was a load of old shit.
But 25%, my wife's very careful with her research. 25% of the UK clinically obese.
Yeah, it was one in four kids turn up to school already obese. Primary school.
That is mad.
Yeah. We got pretty chunky. Mm. But younger people are seeing this whole fat positivity, right? Body positivity. That shite's already over. So Victoria's Secret started engaging a whole bunch of the Chumbawambas. They can't sell a single pair of pants. And there's no surprise in that because they're so far up the ass cheek of people who have fatty great arses. You're not going to sell a G-string when it's rammed up the arse of some Chumbawamba, are you?
Do you not worry about hurting people's feelings?
No, not at all.
No.
Because they're happy to hurt their own bodies. So why is me pointing out what you've done to yourself? How does that make me in the wrong? But I will help you. I will support you. If you watch my fat story where I put on 4 stone in 3 months and lost it again in 3 months to help, sure. So I don't think I'm offensive because I put my money where my mouth is.
Would you hire an obese person?
No, you know very well I would not.
I don't know.
You do know.
I don't know.
You do know. You're just acting naive so that you can get away with being the good guy.
Well, I'm here.
Do you hire Chumbawambas? Have you got any Chumbawambas?
Yeah, we have.
Do you keep them in the back office?
No.
Do you put them in a cupboard?
No.
Do you feed them?
No.
Do you worry about your fridge?
No.
Do you lock down the cheese?
No.
Do you watch out for the sausages?
No.
Do you buy them elasticated wasteware?
Well, I don't do much of the recruitment, so I've...
I guess not laugh when they're laughing.
Okay. What if there's a coder?
I'm going to go into stand-up mode and be like,
You can do it. What if there's a coder and they're really fucking good at their job and they're obese? Why wouldn't you hire them if you want them to do their really good job of coding? Surely that makes you... We'll let you all have a fucking moment. Yeah, you have your moment. It just snorted.
So.
Right, so you need a really good coder. The best one for the job is obese. And you wouldn't hire them.
No.
Why not?
Because they're obese.
But you're not hiring them for anything other than doing the job.
And I'm not buying the idea that the very best coder in the whole planet is obese. That's just a convenient story for you to try and set me up with.
Well,
I can't hire an obese...
I'm not trying to set you up.
You are. You're trying to make me sound like a bad guy because
I'm not trying to make you look like anything. We're discussing. And you can answer however you want. And also, you tried to turn it on me. Do you hire fat people? So you tried to make me look bad. And okay, I'm going to answer.
Have you ever banged a fat person?
I think at uni I did once, yeah.
Were you, why?
I was hammered. Yeah. But just once. But how would you know unless you tried once?
How many times?
Once.
So, you know.
But I'm not talking about banging a fat person.
No, I just thought we'd get that clip.
Yeah, all right. Well, I could cut it out. I'm going to answer it for you. If I had someone who was better at the job than the other person and they were obese, I wouldn't be fattest and I would hire the obese person if they were better at the job. And you wouldn't. Why not?
Because I've obviously got issues around fat people.
So you are fattest then?
No, I've got issues around fat people in the sense that I really, really want them to be like better. and I want them to have a happier life. And I know from having put on 4 stone in 3 months and lost it again and met lots of fat people along the way, it's brutal. Mm. It's brutal when you feel shit about yourself. It's brutal when you look at everything you put on and you're not happy. It's brutal when you don't even want to go out the front door of your house because you can't face the world because you feel crap about yourself. And it's brutal when you can't do your own damn shoes up. And I know that personally. And I know how much better you feel if you feel better about yourself. You may feel better about yourself at 18 stone 3 instead of 18 stone 12. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the margin of something that would make you feel happy. And I genuinely want people to feel better. And I genuinely would go walking with them any day of the week to make that happen. And I genuinely believe if you feel horrid about yourself, you aren't going to be as happy as you could be. And I will not shift from that proposition, even if it means you have to put a post-it on me calling me fattest. I know, actually, I want people to feel better. And people out there, if the Chumbawamba's watching, say, it's none of your business, you skinny bitch. And I accept that that would be a self-defense pushback. It's none of your business, you horse face bint. I accept that's your initial pushback. But I suspect, somewhere deep down, if you lost a few pounds, you'd feel better. And I don't think I would be able to contain myself on a daily basis from interrupting the coda to suggest we go for a walk. That's not productive. And as a former Chumbawamba, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I know.
I know you know. And you wrestle with it on an hourly basis.
Still, to this day. And I will say, I do agree with what you said, that I was very unhappy when I was overweight. And I remember when people would call me really fucking horrible things, they were probably the motivation to lose weight, not the people who pretended to like me, but actually called me a fat bastard behind my back.
And you see, I can't bear, you know, so you can call someone fattest or whatever, but the thought of people being unkind will set me off any day of the week, because I know that hurts, because I spent a lot of time with people who, they live their lives either in tears or unable to leave the front door of their house. So it isn't coming from a place of hatred. It's coming from, I want people to, and watching people feel better about themselves. I love it. And that's why I love doing what I do, where I get to, you know, make fun of usually myself, but people feel better. And people feel better to know they're not on their own. And that's really where it comes from. So the initial reaction is, oh, fuck off, you nosy bitch. It's none of your business. I understand that's anger, but actually it comes from I think maybe you actually care. And I do.
So we have a new round on the show. It's called the Disruptors Round.
Come on.
Yeah.
Look at you being all creative.
Yeah.
You don't sit on your laurels.
No.
No, you get yourself a t-shirt with a disruptor on it.
That makes me so disruptive.
I know. Look at my earrings. Look how disruptive they are.
Get a close-up on those after. Does it say fuck it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, after Elon.
Fuck it.
Fuck you. Fuck it. And also, I think that's a subtle suggestion when I'm at a bar.
Does it work?
Yeah.
I might get me a fuck it watch.
Great plan.
It's big
Let's
enough. Let's get a fuck it watch.
Get a fuck it watch and we'll go out.
Oh, what's the time? Oh, fuck it o'clock.
That is such a good merch idea.
Yeah.
You've just merged.
We've come
something.
Up with a couple of good ideas this show.
You've got banking, online banking. No, you've got like
financial helpline.
But you're not calling it that.
No,
that's done
no,
shit.
No, but it's just we've just started. All right.
Would it be like what would be? That's me. I'm doing an impression of needing the helpline. What do I call?
Yeah. Who do you call? Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Oh no, you were supposed to come up with the name.
Yeah,
then.
I know, but
well, it wasn't Ghostbusters, no. Was it?
Give me some time to think.
But I thought it would come under pressure.
Because, like, Samaritans doesn't tell you what it is. It's obviously a noun.
Oh, I see. So it could be called, like...
Could be called Ruby. More money. Right. So for the rest of the show, we're on fairly quick-fire answers.
Are you trying to say that you want me to be short and precise in order to make your edit easier?
Is that doable?
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Well, no, these three questions don't need to be short and precise. The rest, short and precise. So the disruptors round.
Can you not stretch your legs at any point in the next section?
I'll do it first. My erect legs.
Get yourself stretching out.
Okay.
Okay.
What's the most disruptive thing you've ever done?
I mean, there's been quite a lot. I mean, firing Lord Sugar, that pissed off a lot of people.
Did it piss off Lord Sugar?
And the production company, and so yeah, 12 million viewers. So that, yeah, calling out government tyranny in Australia and getting deported.
Didn't you put your tattoo on your arse for that?
Yeah, deported tattoo on my arse.
We've got a clip of that already, so.
Don't need that.
No.
I've disrupted quite a few marriages.
Really, how?
By just being incredibly sexually attractive to lots of husbands.
So you've taken men away from, really?
Yes.
Many?
Many.
How many?
Many. No, but my last two, absolutely, husbands were other people's.
And you stole them?
Yes, like a thief in the night, except in the daytime in great underwear.
So was it literally strategic, I'm going to steal you from your wife?
Yes.
Wow. Does that not make you scared that someone else might steal your husband from you?
Exactly, and that's precisely what did happen. Karma made it such that I don't even believe in karma, but let's go with it. So my first husband, when he left me in the maternity ward with a one-day-old, ran off with the secretary. So people will say, there you go. What goes round comes round. They're not wrong.
Mm.
She had great tits. Other disruptive things in my life. You know, this is the other things. People paint themselves out to be perfect. And I guess I never have done. So it's easy for them people to say, oh, what a terrible person. But then forgetting that they've done something similar, or someone they're next to has absolutely done the same but kept their mouth shut. Mm. I just haven't kept mine shut.
Mm.
Yeah, so lots of disruptive stuff. I think what I struggle with, and it's every time we talked about this, but I get to a point where I feel I could be doing so great, right? You know, I can be the columnist for Mail Online. I can have my own radio show on LBC, which is unbelievable because it's massively leftist and I'm there. I can be probably one of the best known names, and then I can just hand grenade the lot, self-detonate by saying my truth too loudly. Self-detonation I'm spectacularly good at. And actually, I don't regret it. The fallout is always catastrophic. I always have to be shamed and I have to lose something.
And do you feel the shame?
No, that's the thing. I have to be shamed.
But you don't feel the shame?
No, and that's something else I really
try. Because otherwise you probably wouldn't do it, because shame is a horrible feeling.
So I try and say to people, young people again, it could be any people, it could be ladies my age, I suppose, is shame is something that's put on you by others, right? You can only be shamed if you allow yourself to be. But if you know again who you are and what you did, and if it's okay, you won't be shamed. Mm. And so I say to people, you know, do think of shame like a gift. And if you accept it, well, that's your choice. But also you can refuse gifts. So I choose not to be shamed, usually because I'm not ashamed of what I've done. I made a decision, or I had a disruptive moment.
Mm.
And I really believe in that whole idea of like, go with what you think, your heart.
Mm.
So yeah, I've lived a very, very disruptive life.
Would you like a t-shirt?
Saying disruptive?
Yeah.
Yeah. I need it in small with a V-neck. Right. I need a female cut, even though I'm a bit transvestite. Well,
not fucking Alexander McQueen. You know what it's like with merch. You get your sizes sent to you and you print them.
You say that we have ladies' ones, V-neck, cap sleeve. If you don't know about that, if you've got disruptive t-shirts in merch and you haven't thought about what the ladies' one needs to look like.
Well, we haven't launched our merch.
Well, then have a chat with me before that.
We will.
Because the ladies' ones need to look different to those ones.
Okay.
Because we need a...
Got it.
And we need a...
All right, then. What's the biggest risk you've ever taken?
Just... A physical risk has been going to South Africa and to highlight that black gangs are killing white farmers and sleeping on the white farms for 3 months. Just me and a little security team of properly hard men, and then having my passport confiscated because the ANC realised I was there, and then at passport control when my passport was taken from me. And then knowing that I was going to be taken off for detention, and knowing that a white woman doesn't come back from that, and the lads being in the car park and they were told to draw their weapons. So there's been physical moments in my life where I had spoken to a lot of white women who'd been raped in South Africa, and they'd always told me there were certain things you could do to try and put someone off raping you. and I was trying to do those things, physical things, before they took me away. So I've been on the edge of...
What are those
things you can do? So if you kind of, you know, if you... I don't want to be ungracious towards the ladies, but like if you soil yourself, then you're more less likely for people to try and rape you.
Right, wow.
So a physical thing, that risk would be, we've done this before, haven't we, with my brain. I had a massive brain surgery, and the deficit for my massive brain surgery was speech, sight, left hand, left leg, that I wouldn't have those when I came back, if I came back. And I made the decision to have the surgery because I couldn't live my life as it was. And I got really lucky. And I have all of that, more or less. It's a bit wonky on this side, but it's fine. So that would be the biggest risk. And then, of course, just speaking out the way I have. You know, people coming for you, coming to hurt you or coming to chop your head off. A couple of jihadis gone to prison, stalkers or whatever. So just that. It's more of a physical thing, but I don't fear that. And all the other stuff, monetary risk, losing my house, none of that matters to me. So they're more specific risks that I've taken. But I have a strong sense that your end is already decided. And so I genuinely have no fear.
What's your most brutal life lesson?
You know that the faster you become good at handling pain, the better you're going to do.
That is, I want to just sit on that. Because I think that's really profound. And I think people spend their whole life avoiding pain because it hurts. And the problem is, the longer you avoid all your pain, all you're doing is attract bigger pain. But you think you're not because you're avoiding it. Yeah, that's a powerful lesson, that one.
I think I've been fortunate in some way that I was not able to avoid pain. So with not to bang on about my epilepsy, like I have no sympathy, no big... You know, I've got a condition, so I can't. None of that. I never told anyone about it until I started talking about it quite recently. But my epilepsy meant that my seizures were so big, they would dislocate my arms, both my arms. They've been out 45 times there. I could bump through my tongue. My teeth are wonky because so I was fortunate that pain was brought in very early. And I fractured my back while I was at Sandhurst at the military academy. And... So I learned physical pain early, and then the pain of, I guess, being hated and being called everything. The quicker you can learn pain, how to process pain, I feel like I'm very, very good at handling an incredible amount of pain, including other people's. And I think that's why I feel like if someone's hurting, this draws back to my fat thing, which is if someone's hurting, I actually feel like I want to take that. And it can be misinterpreted as being unkind, and it feels unkind, but actually I feel like, go on, put it on me, because I can carry it. So that's the way I see it, I think. I feel like I am still able now. I feel stronger than probably I have. It's just load it on me and I'll make it better. And somewhere along the line, that's got to be a lie, isn't it? Can't always make everything better. But that's actually what I think I'm trying to do. How about that for honest?
There you go. What's the most disruptive thing anyone's ever said or done to you?
Oh, yeah. Lots of things I can think of. I'm supposed to be answering these short, aren't I?
I told you fucking couldn't do it.
I know.
It's all right. I'm enjoying it.
No, but I was trying to be assisting. Disruptive thing anyone's done to me. My first husband leaving me with a one-year-old changed my whole life and changed the way I saw life forever.
So now we've got another new round.
Nope.
We've got a one-word answer round. We've never done a one-word answer round in the history of over 1,000.
Hold on, I've got to prepare. Yeah. So what you're asking me to do is answer in one word.
Yeah, I'm just going to say a name or a small phrase, and you just have to say one word.
Do you know what the round, next time we do this, the next round you're going to bring me is you just make a small noise.
That's a good idea.
Because obviously as social media gets more and more desperate for quick responses, next time you come here, you'll that. Be like, right? Because that's people's attention span just getting smaller. Right, go on then. Now I've got my words out.
Okay. So one word, and you can take your time to think of the one word. Donald Trump.
Genius.
The BBC.
Dinosaurs.
President Joe Biden.
Unwell.
Nigel Farage.
Rising.
Sam Smith.
I'm not allowed to say Greg Sausage Roll with nipple tassels. So I'll say, I'm not allowed to say fat bastard, so I'll say cunt.
Rishi Sunak.
Short.
Ethnic minorities.
Overrated.
The school system.
Prehistoric.
The benefits system.
Failed.
The tax system.
Crushing.
Cancel culture.
Beaten.
We did it. First ever. That was impressive. And now it's the final quick fire round.
How many more rounds have you got?
Well, I've still got a bit of time. I don't have to be in my next gig and for another 5 hours. Is that your way of telling me to fuck off out?
No, not at all. It's just, it's so funny. You're like, now we've got a new round.
Yeah.
And then you went, and then another round. And here's a round.
Yeah.
So I just wondered if there was a total of rounds.
This
just
is, so the, I have this a is sense. The final round.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me the rules.
Quick fire answers.
Do only miming.
TikTok shorts.
Am I only miming?
Only miming?
Through the use of sign language only.
No. This isn't, that won't work. You can try it if you want.
Like the South African, did you see? When, no. Like, so much in South Africa is dodgy. So at the, I believe it was it the president's birthday? I don't know. They employed a sign language guy. But the sign language guy, in a moment of South African genius, wasn't actually a sign language guy. And so was just... and he just literally made up shit the whole thing and did the whole ceremony. Wow. Not a word of it was anything signed.
How do they get away? Do you know, I have these...
It was glorious.
I have recurring nightmares that I'm on a stage in front of 10,000 people with my favourite band and I'm the drummer, but I can't play and no one knows.
So you're just
so
pretending.
Just like ruin everything.
Oh,
but this person went along and did it and didn't even clearly have that fear.
Yes, exactly. Had the self-belief.
Yeah, that I'm just going to have fun and wing it.
And wing it and I will be paid. And I will, and no one will know. Yeah,
I greatly
amazing.
Admire that.
I so admire him.
Yeah.
He had, because this was our thing about being poor. In order for him not to be poor and to get that contract, he just had to make everyone believe he knew what he was doing. I love him.
Awesome. Okay, right. Short. 1 million cash or 1 million social media followers, engaged fans, which would you take and why?
Oh, cash.
Why?
Cash and give to people. Lovely. Well, who cares who's watching me?
Well, why would you do content if you didn't want people to see it? Why would you go to your stand-up shows if you didn't want anyone in the audience?
Because everybody has a lovely time. I want people to have
But you want people in the audience, don't you? So therefore
no.
You need a following. Oh, you don't. You want empty seats?
No, but you're making out that all of these things are binary and they're not. I want people to come because I want them to have a lovely time. I don't want them to come because I want to see a full audience. I do what I do on Twitter or Instagram because I want people to find the fun or be determined to be positive, but I don't need to be followed.
No, but the social media is the vehicle to do that. So you can have 1 million engaged social media followers and not be vain and use it to do good and get people to come and have a good time. Because you're looking at it binary that social media is for ego, but it doesn't have to be.
No, but I have never once in the history of me put follow. What do people say? Follow, click. So you just did that weird, terrible palsy face.
No,
again.
I didn't. I just licked my teeth.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Why are you licking your teeth then?
Because it's been a long time since I've cleaned them last.
Do you want a toothbrush?
I brought one with me.
Did you? Do you want to do them in a minute?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Could borrow mine. I've only got syphilis.
No, I wasn't even going to say anything.
What were we
you
talking about?
You said that in the style of your lesbian.
I'm a lesbian with God. Syphilis. A beaver buffet.
We were...
Do you want to dine on my beaver buffet?
Next question.
No, what was the question?
The 1 million cash important. Or 1 million social... You already took your kit off and took the cash.
Yeah, you're
the cash
but what's the thing people put when they do as they do? Link it, like it. To, I've never ever...
Like,
follow,
subscribe, share.
Right. I've never said that in my whole life. There is not one thing of mine you will ever find that on, ever. Because that, to your point, I'm not asking people to do any of those things.
When you say that, can you ask people to do that to our show?
Yes. Link it, like it, love it, tweet it, subscribe it, blow him.
Boom. Blow me.
Boom.
All right. We just got, go. That's good. We're going to use that now on all of ours.
Link it, blow it.
Subscribe.
Yeah, I've never asked for that, but okay. I will ask for you because
okay,
you're desperate.
You. Yeah. Does money make you happy?
Nope.
Is there
you
any?
Don't need to be quick.
Is there any amount of money that would make you happy?
No, no. I've lost more money than most people earn, and that's okay.
What's the best advice you ever received?
At the military academy, we're taught humour in adversity. So at the moment of extreme pain, physical pain, to find fun. Yeah.
What's the worst advice you ever received?
Oh, you know, anything cautious. Don't do it. No. Oh, you might. Oh, this might happen. You know, anything that makes you smaller. Just, and I can't bear it. And I can't now. I can't stand a rule. Like the thought of all the rules I used to listen to or hear. Can't stand it. Anything that stops you, don't listen to that. Push away from that. Anyone that tries to put you down, I know it's supposed to be short, but anyone that tries to make you, anyone who is masquerades as your friend, but somehow makes you feel worse about yourself, push that away. Push it away. Yeah, that.
What's your biggest regret?
I don't, it's easy to say I don't have one, isn't it? But I'm trying not to say I don't have one, although that would be my natural reaction. What's my regret? I honestly don't, I can't think of a regret I have. Because my life has been so not perfect. It's been so not perfect. But I don't regret, I wouldn't change anything. Because if I was to change anything, I would save myself a lot of hurt. But I wouldn't have gone down the paths I've gone down. So I don't think I regret anything. I'm sure there's small things I regret if I haven't been nice to someone in the way that I would want to, or I've been unkind to someone if I didn't say thank you for things or something, that sort of thing. People I would have disappointed that I maybe didn't know I disappointed, something like that, that would feel bad. I think one regret actually, I don't even know if I regret it, but I was given the Cunt of the Year award by two pranksters. And I went over and received the award, not to get the award, but I was told it was for the farmers that I love in South Africa. It was an event to help them. And I suppose I regret not being smart enough to see that I was being stitched up. But in a way, I'm kind of grateful that that happened, because I think it was a really, really good kick in the guts about also keeping hold of some sort of sense and logic and rational person that looks into things properly instead of just throwing your heart at everything. So I guess I was foolish and I regret that I wasn't smarter, because I would want my daughters to be smarter than that. That would be a regret.
What do you think your legacy is?
Oh, for some people, I'll have made them feel like they got heard for a little bit.
And do you have a tip for being mentally strong and resilient?
Yeah, yes, you're much braver than you know, and when you're tested, you'll find out. So all you have to do for now is believe in it, because you're braver than you know.
And I know you don't do follow me, like me, subscribe,
follow me, like me, subscribe me, buy from me, do this for me.
But where are you most active? Where should we follow you for your next gigs?
Yes, do come and join the audience. You're going to come, hopefully. So Katie's Arms is the pub, as in arms. So katiesarms.com, and all the tickets for the Silly Cow Tour are there. And all I would say is, don't feel like you need to come to see me. I told you I'm not very good at selling my things. Come to be in the audience, because it's special. And if I could bottle that, I would.
And what about, and which social are you most active on and haven't been cancelled from?
I know, well, I'm back. So Instagram _Katie_Hopkins_, lots of underscores. And I'm back on Twitter @KatieHopkins, and we're back at 1 million followers.
Wow. Well, thanks for inviting us down.
That is my pleasure. You're the only people to be here ever.
Oh, wow. We've got an exclusive.
You have.
And I think you are, there's maybe only one, maybe two other guests where we've done three rounds. It's our third round, isn't it?
It's 3 of 10.
Yeah. Oh, you've already got that planned.
Yeah. You just don't know it yet.
No. Are you going to steal me from my wife?
I'm going to try. I put in my best effort.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Right. But I feel like she can watch this and know that she's really got nothing to worry about.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.